This is a special report from CBS News in Washington. From the Oval Office in the White House, an economic address by President Gerald Ford. Now, here is CBS News correspondent Barry Serafin.
At this hour, President Ford is in the Oval Office of the White House, where in a few moments he will announce and explain his decision regarding whether he will, as expected, sign the $22.8 billion tax cut bill passed by Congress 3 days ago. That bill goes far beyond the $16 billion measure the president had sought. It includes rebates on 1974 taxes of between $100 and $200 for most taxpayers and a number of provisions, including the elimination of the oil depletion allowance for major oil companies. Mr. Ford has called the decision whether or not to sign the bill a tough one, and he asked for television time on that subject tonight. Now, the President of the United States.
Fellow Americans and fellow taxpayers, 11 weeks ago in mid-January, I requested the new Congress to pass, as its first priority, a simple $16 billion reduction in federal income taxes in order to stimulate economic activity and put people back to work. I asked for a one-time refund to individual 1974 taxpayers, up to a maximum of $1,000, enough to assist in the purchase of new cars, home appliances, or other improvements, thus helping business and workers in areas that have been especially hard hit by the recession. I also asked for bigger investment credits to encourage all businessmen and farmers to expand and make more jobs. Jobs were then and are now my main concern. Unfortunately, though some other economic signs are improving, the employment picture remains bleak. I want most to help those who want to get back to work in productive jobs. This can best be done by temporary tax incentives to charge up our free enterprise system, not by government handouts and make-work programs that go on forever. Therefore, over the past few months, I have repeatedly urged the Congress to get a straightforward tax cut bill on my desk by Easter, one that would restore some of the buying power American families lost to inflation and rising prices in 1973 and 1974. My objective was to put money in the pockets of the American people promptly, rather than have the Congress dream up new schemes for more of your money to be spent by the government in Washington. Last Wednesday, before recessing, the Congress did pass a tax reduction bill, which is here before me. The tax cut, finally adopted by the Congress, represents a compromise between the $16 billion I recommended in January and the $32 billion figure passed by the Senate. I said that I would accept a reasonable compromise, and the $23 billion tax reduction is within reason. However, this bill also distributes the cuts differently, and in my opinion, fails to give adequate tax relief to the millions of middle-income taxpayers who already contribute the biggest share of federal taxes. But the most troublesome defect of this bill is the fact that the Congress added to an urgently needed anti-recession tax reduction a lot of extraneous changes in our tax laws, some well-intentioned, but very ill-considered, which should have waited for deliberate action in committee hearings and full debate by all members. Instead, they were adopted in a hectic last-minute session before recessing. This is no way to legislate fundamental tax reforms, and every member of the Congress knows it. Upon their return, I will again ask the House and Senate to work with me on a comprehensive review of our tax structure to eliminate inequities and to ensure adequate revenues for the future without crippling economic growth. I commend those members of the Congress who fought for a clean and uncomplicated tax cut to create more jobs and speed economic recovery. If I were still in the House of Representatives, I would have opposed extraneous amendments and would have voted to send this bill back to committee for further cleaning up. As president, however, I cannot, under the Constitution, accept a part of this bill and reject the rest. It comes before me on a take-it-or-leave-it basis. The Congress has gone home. I believe my veto would eventually be sustained, but I am by no means sure that this Congress would send me a better bill. It might even be worse. The people of this country need to know right now how to plan their financial affairs for the rest of this year. Farmers and businessmen have already waited too long to find out what investments they can make to improve their production and put people back on the payroll. Confidence depends on certainty, and while the Congress deliberated, uncertainty has clouded financial planning throughout the country. Our country needs the stimulus and the support of a tax cut, and needs it now. I have therefore decided to sign this bill so that its economic benefits can begin to work. I do this despite the serious drawbacks in the bill. Most of the drawbacks are enacted for only 1 year. I strongly urge the members of the Congress to calmly reflect upon these provisions and let the worst expire. However, any damage they do is outweighed by the urgent necessity of an anti-recession tax reduction right now. Even if I asked the Congress to send me a better bill, and it did, it would take too long a time to get one back, and I cannot in good conscience risk more delay. But I will work with the Congress to not only remedy the deficiencies in this bill, but also the dangerous actions and attitudes towards huge federal deficits some members have already shown in other legislative decisions. The first part of my economic recovery recommendations last January, a prompt tax cut of reasonable size, now becomes law. The second and equally important part of my economic program was to restrain federal spending by cutting back $17 billion in existing programs and by a one-year moratorium on all new federal spending programs, except in the critical field of energy. So far, these proposals have been mostly ignored or rejected by a majority of the members of the Congress. Now that we have reduced our tax revenues by some $7 billion more than I proposed, we must move to reduce federal spending in every way we can. We cannot afford another round of inflation due to giant and growing deficits that would cancel out all our expected gains in economic recovery. Maybe I can show you the situation better on this chart. If Congress had accepted all my economic recovery proposals, both for tax cuts and spending cuts, the estimated federal deficit for fiscal year 1976 would have been about $52 billion, as represented by this column. This kind of a deficit is far too high, but most of it was unavoidable and was brought about by mandatory federal payment programs already on the statute books, by increased unemployment compensation and reduced tax revenues due to the recession. This is where we are today. The tax cuts in the bill I have just signed and other changes will bring the estimated fiscal year 1976 deficit up to approximately $60 billion. Since January, Congress has rejected or ignored most of my requested spending cuts. If Congress fails to make these reductions, it will add up to about $12 billion to the contemplated 1976 deficit. On top of that, as I look at the new spending actions which committees of the Congress are already seriously considering, I can easily add up another $30 billion of spending. This would bring the deficit to the enormous total of $100 billion. Deficits of this magnitude are far too dangerous to permit. They threaten another vicious spiral of runaway double-digit inflation, which could well choke off any economic recovery. Interest rates, now starting down, would again climb as the federal government borrowed from the private money market to finance its $100 billion deficit. Individual citizens would be unable to borrow money for new homes, cars, and other needs. Businesses, despite the increased tax credit, would delay investments and expansions to put the unemployed back to work. I am therefore serving notice now that this is as high as our fiscal 1976 deficit should go. I am drawing the line right here. This is as far as we dare to go. I will insist every attempt by the Congress to add another dollar to this deficit by new spending programs. I will make no exceptions, except where our long-range national security interests are involved, as in the attainment of energy independence, or for urgent humanitarian needs. In short, in signing this bill, I am keeping my promise to reach a reasonable compromise with the Congress and to provide a needed boost to the economy. I must say again, this is as far as I will go. If we use common sense and prudence, I am confident that the present recession will retreat into history. If your congressmen and your senators return from their recess with new awareness of your deep concern and desire for caution and care in steering our difficult economic course, we will soon get back on the broad highway of increasing productivity and prosperity for all our people. Thank you, and good evening.
In case you joined us late, from the White House, President Ford has been talking about the tax cut bill passed earlier this week by Congress. He criticized that bill, calling some of the tax reform amendments it carries extraneous and ill-considered, but he referred to the $23 billion measure as within reason, said people have a right to know how to plan their financial affairs, and he signed the bill. Mr. Ford said the bill would boost the federal deficit for the coming fiscal year to $60 billion and declared that that was where he was going to draw the line. He said action being considered in Congress could jump that deficit up to $100 billion, but he vowed to resist every possible added dollar. And again, he said, this is as far as I will go. The president released the text of his remarks actually late this afternoon on a hold-for-release basis until his appearance tonight. Among those who have been reading over the president's remarks is CBS News White House correspondent Phil Jones. And Phil is at the White House. Phil, if you're there, I wonder, the president gave us some of the economic reasons for making his decision tonight. What were some of the other reasons?
Well, Barry, some of the aides I have talked with here this evening indicate that this decision was primarily a political decision. And as you could tell by the president's remarks here tonight, he's still not crazy about the tax bill. And all week, his aides have been indicating that he would certainly like to veto it if he could do so politically. But in the end, Mr. Ford apparently decided that if he did veto the bill, it might take as long as 3 months for the Democratic-controlled Congress to send him another tax package. And he felt this might be disastrous to the economy, since he is still convinced that what we need is an anti-recession tax cut bill. Also, he was afraid that if he did veto it and Congress took up the matter again, the next bill that they might send to him would be less acceptable than the one now before him. Some of the economic experts here are still not convinced just to what kind of stimulus this is going to provide. They are concerned that those getting the biggest chunks of the tax cut may not be the ones who will go right out and buy refrigerators and automobiles. Part of the show here tonight was also aimed at the conservatives in Congress and the Republican Party, who have been saying all along that Mr. Ford is not working hard enough to hold down the 1976 budget deficit. But in the end, Mr. Ford apparently decided the same thing that one of his economic advisors said earlier this week, that to veto it would be political suicide. Barry?
Thanks very much, Phil. We might point out that from here, President Ford is on his way to California to spend several days and make some appearances. For Phil Jones, I'm Barry Serafin from CBS News in Washington. Good night.
This has been a special report from CBS News in Washington.